Welcome back to Wokeland.
Yes, thank you guys for tuning in. I'm Elsa.
I'm Anayo.
And we are the Simones.
Yes, yes.
This is a very special episode. Mm-hmm. This one is about gentrification.
Yes.
And
hot topic.
Very. Gentrification is genocide.
Yes. That is, wow, okay. Yes.
I mean, I'm popping off.
Okay.
Like, let's go.
We getting right to it.
Hello.
Hello.
It is.
Gentrification is genocide. Gentrification is affecting everybody, whether you are woke to it or not. It mm-hmm. is affecting everybody. If you live somewhere or if you don't, it's affecting you. It's, you know, kind of been a hot topic in the Bay, in Oakland specifically, in San Francisco, and of course, all over the country.
Yeah, and I think for us, especially moving from San Jose to West Oakland, I think we've been very conscious of our presence here mm-hmm. and understanding those who have lived here before us, and honestly just noticing how quick the visual landscape has changed, all the renovation that's going on,
yeah.
all of the new construction that's going on. I mean, mm-hmm. just recently they started paving up all the potholes in the neighborhood, and mm-hmm. it's been like that for 2 years and certainly before us, right? Mm-hmm. So it really is this opening of like consciousness about what is going on around us, from walking to the BART station, seeing the people, seeing our neighbors change, mm-hmm. and what this is like for people who are being displaced, from people who owned homes who are now living in these encampments.
Right.
So we knew we had to dive into this discussion and also dig deep and see if we're part of the problem. Like, can we gentrify?
Yeah.
Can black people be gentrifiers?
Yes.
So we had an amazing discussion with three people who have all dealt with gentrification in their own way. And this is part of a 2-part series of our gentrification episode. So we hope you guys tune in for part 2 next week, and we hope you guys enjoy the discussion.
I feel like this is like the long-awaited, much-anticipated...
Before we get started, can we just give props to all the black women in the room?
Okay.
This is side note.
Tell it.
This is totally... I know it's off subject, but just all the black queens in the room.
Yes. Oh,
boom.
Thank you, yes. Hometown Hero.
Every day. That's what's
every
up.
Every day.
Before we can even introduce our guests, yes, we have some guests in the studio with us.
Yes.
But yeah, so, well, before we talk about what we're going to talk about, let's introduce our guests that are here with us in the studio. Here we have Jamel.
Native of Oakland, California, founder of the Real Oakland brand, outside, along with a lot of other brands.
Yes.
And I can go on and on. But
Barbecue and Wild Black.
Oh, mm-hmm. yeah, definitely. Can't forget mm-hmm. Barbecue and Cannot. Wild Black.
Mm-hmm.
We brought the whole city out.
Okay. You sure did.
Yes.
Okay, and we have... beautiful young lady next to me here, Ave, who's That's always me. Keeping it diasporic.
Yes.
From?
Oakland.
Yes.
Born and raised.
Born and raised, three what generations part? Deep.
Ooh. Yay. Okay.
Yeah, That's what parts of Oakland are y'all
actually,
from?
Actually, I was born in Alta Bates, was actually in Berkeley.
Okay. I was born in Alta Bates, too.
Oh, yay!
Everybody was
okay.
born
Everybody.
Sorry,
everybody.
Alta Bates is like the best Alta hospital that
it
had
is.
New babies at. Like,
my mom's. Down the street.
Yeah, my mom's was like, when her water broke working at Kaiser and May, she made them take her to Alta Bates.
Oh, word.
Oh, wow.
that's how real it
that's
is.
That's real. Okay. My name is still on the plaque there.
Oh, nice.
So, they didn't put my name on They didn't put my name on the plaque.
I grew up, we started in what's called Funk Town, which is on the east side of the lake.
Yeah.
On East 18th, and then moved to Richmond and back to Oakland like a true Bay Area person.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah.
I pretty much lived in Northeast and West Oakland. I was actually telling Elsa that a block away, my grandmother lived there for 30 years.
Yeah.
So it's like where my mom and my uncles grew up. Mm-hmm. But I pretty much have lived everywhere, but predominantly in West Oakland. Mm-hmm. And I graduated from Oakland Tech, the best high school in the world.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Shout out to Tech.
That's down the street, too.
It is down the street.
Yes.
You guys have so much, like, roots here.
Yes.
Definitely.
So, this episode is about gentrification.
Mm-hmm.
It's a heavy, heavy, heavy topic.
Yes.
So let's, and I can't think of any other people we would rather have this conversation with, so mm-hmm. thank you.
I'm totally going to piss off some white people.
Okay. I mean, hey, no, you got to do
what
you
got to
do. You got to do what you got to do.
Right. Keep it all the way 100 with us. This is
Wokeland,
so we don't, you know, no half-stepping.
So, I mean, let's dive right in. What is your definition of gentrification? And has it changed in the last 6 months? Has it changed at all, in your opinion?
I'll let the ladies go first. The name
What's your definition of gentrification?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. I feel like it has a lot of different variations. Mm. But I would say to me, it's like the displacement of people who are like from a local area. And it's not really, it's a, like a movement of class privileged people who are taking over areas and not really preserving or keeping in mind people who are from here or people are from here and how it's affecting them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And I think it is a lot to do with white people and it's really triggering, but I think it's about all people too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it plays into like class privilege.
Yeah. Mm. And we're going to talk about that too. And we're going to talk about black gentrifiers and can mm-hmm. black people be considered gentrifiers.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll get to it.
The sister basically kind of said what I was thinking, but to give a more raw, it's colonization of white people in black and brown neighborhoods.
They call it neocolonization.
Yeah, yeah, like, I mean, ever since Black Panther came out, I've been calling most white people colonizers.
Right.
Yeah. And let me be clear, I'm not like a racist or anything like that. I just call things for what it is. Yeah. But, you know, gentrification is what you see with the barbecue Becky situation, what sparked the barbecue while black. Gentrification is, you know, in some elements of it, you can't blame the people who lived here, who moved here, because, you know, a lot of times they move here for a job or whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's the people who come here and they don't want to engulf themselves in the culture. They want to change the culture, so therefore they're trying to colonize on our land. Mm-hmm. And they act like we don't belong here and we've been here.
Yeah.
And it's not just black and brown people getting gentrified out. It's yellow people and some white people who've been here for their whole lives. I have white friends that had to move out of the city because they couldn't afford to live here.
Yeah.
And they have pretty good jobs.
Yeah.
You know, when I first moved out on my own, I was 20, and this is like in like 2009. You know, you can get a one bedroom apartment for like $800.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Now you can't find a studio apartment in Oakland for $800.
It's not 10 years yet.
Right.
Yeah. So to end, but to also further into here, has it changed in the last 6 months? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You have the barbecue Beckys and the permit patties in San Francisco, and all these people around the country. Not just in the Bay Area. And I'm starting to think it's a devised plan by somebody bigger because it's like, but I also think Donald Trump is giving racist white people ammunition when I say that. He's giving them the platform, but I also feel like he's making them think that they can just say anything. And, you know, like a lot of my folks say, we're not our grandparents. You will get knocked the hell out.
Yeah.
Straight up. So you think because you came here, you might pay $2,500 for this overpriced apartment or whatever, you think you have the right to dictate what people do?
Right.
No, you will get laid out on your ass.
Yeah.
Right.
And recorded.
Yeah.
Right.
And shared and viral. So,
So y'all would definitely say it's like a class issue?
Absolutely.
I think it's part of a class issue. Yeah. I think, of course, with class issues comes race issues, too.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they go hand in hand.
They go, like, yeah, I think so, too.
Okay.
So, I mean, just going back to, like, do you think it's changed in the past 6 months? Hell no. Like, I think it's becoming more aware just because of the social media and because of the viral. But I have to move in August next month. And luckily, I found a place in East Oakland. But for a long time, I was like, Dad, I think I'm going to have to move.
You got so
my dad
lucky.
Lives in South Berkeley. Mm-hmm. Grandparents in East Oakland. Like, this is my roots. And I'm just like, I can't afford to live here. And he's like, well, but you need your support system. I'm just like, but I also need to, like, I'm about to be 30. I don't want to live with six people, you know? I'm trying to live on my own.
And it's gotten to that point where, like, you got to get, like, roommates and
hella roommates.
Hella roommates. You hella grown with hella roommates.
You're like 30 years old and like six other people.
Right.
Not ideal for me, so. I mean, look, again, I found a place. And then I have two dogs, too, so that's just, like, an added burden. But they're important for, like, my mental health, so. Hopefully, I mean, as far as, like, gentrification and the affordability of living, of housing, I don't think it's changed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I think it's getting worse. I seen something online. I think it was in, like, East Palo Alto. So it was, like, a two-bedroom, two-bath, like, $3,900.
Ooh. Yeah.
I mean, I will say gentrification, we've been doing some reading on this. It's not, the term itself is not a new term.
Right.
So it was, like, some British sociologist coined the term in, like, 1964.
Wow. Mm. I didn't know that.
But these are devised plans. Mm-hmm. So while gentrification is a rapid growing thing, once you start seeing little pieces of it, new coffee shops or people who you see walking in the neighborhood that don't look like once you've known
them. Once you see a Starbucks in the hood, it's a wrap.
It's a wrap. Or Whole Foods.
Right. And Starbucks or Whole Foods. Once you see one of them in the middle of the ghetto, you better know they finna get your black ass out of here.
Exactly.
You next.
But that's the hard part, too, because it's like you want, like, people have access to healthy food. Right. And, like, other things that should be normalized.
But it comes with strings attached.
But it comes with strings attached.
And it shouldn't.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know, just speaking for Oakland, you got to blame the mayor, too. She was definitely elected to push a gentrification plan. Yeah. She's done nothing for black and brown people in Oakland, but continue to push us out. We have this high homeless population. Mm-hmm. You keep moving these people around. It's exactly. like, well, where are they supposed to go?
Yeah.
They've been kicked out of their homes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is 100% our local city, state government's fault.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Because the appeal of having gentrifiers in your city is the income tax that comes with someone with a higher salary.
Yeah. Right.
So it only makes sense that, yeah, we want richer folks to come in because we can tax them more
right. mm-hmm.
because they're making 100 plus K. Mm-hmm. And then the city in turn gets that money mm-hmm. and now has money to fund whatever it is that they want to fund.
They sure ain't funding education.
They want to fund. But at the cost of this, it's displacing
mm-hmm. a lot of people.
Thousands of people that
all
look like us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because with having the company, the Real Oakland, somebody asked me one day, how you going to be the Real Oakland when you don't live in Oakland? I said, you want to know what the Real Oakland is?
That's the realest Oakland.
Right. I got pushed the fuck out.
Right.
So exactly. That's like, the real Oakland.
That's the real. I mean, luckily, like, my mother still lives here, but,
yeah.
I mean, I still have, so I'm up here all the time because mm-hmm. I have family and friends who still live here, but, like, personally, I mean, I don't live in Sacramento, which is like an hour and a half away, but, like, personally, if I could live closer, like, I would because I do a lot of business here.
Definitely.
So, but it's a real thing. Like, it's really a real thing. And I feel like if you're going to implement a lot of things into the city, don't shut the people who've been here out mm-hmm. because you're greedy assholes.
Yeah.
And like I said, I mean, I don't think any of the mayors since I've been around have done anything probable for people of color. But, I mean, let's just be honest. The current mayor, she's done shit for black mm-hmm. and brown people besides make false promises.
Because there hasn't been any reflection of that.
Absolutely.
You know? That's the reason why that's truthful. And also, when you get into politics, too, there's these lot of things that go in secrets and, like, higher, like, plans that go into
true.
That. Mm-hmm. So it's always hard. It's always, like, a catch-22, right?
Yeah.
A lot of politics.
Politrickin.
Yeah, somebody actually told me, with, like, dealing with barbecuing while black, trying to get certain permits. They're like, you got to play the politics. And it's like, dude, I don't want to play the politics. Like, I don't want to, like, fall into their bullshit. Like,
exactly.
This is about the people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if it's not about the people, I don't want to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Exactly.
Even like up to now with the current, like they want us to want the vendors to have all these kind of permits and mm-hmm. all this, which like if you're having food permits, I mean food vendors, I understand mm-hmm. it's a health and safety thing, but you want people selling t-shirts that have business licenses. I mean, these are people who just had a couple $100
mm-hmm. right.
Printing up some shirts. They trying to make some money. That's how I started the Real Oakland. I got a financial aid check. I was like, man, let me do something with it.
Right.
Like, I was going to Berkeley City College, and I was just like,
trying to be entrepreneurial.
I'm just trying to be an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. I mean, now granted, you know, the seller's permit is free, mm-hmm. and the business license is like $60, but a lot of times, somebody might have spent their last $200 or $300 just to press up t-shirts.
Right.
Trying to do something for themselves.
Trying to make a profit.
Right.
They just trying to flip their money. So I think, you know, I understand in certain elements of it, but like a lot of times I think it's also because they're trying to hinder
mm-hmm.
what we're trying to do. I mean, if mm-hmm. if you've seen the first barbecue while black, it was so many.
Shout out to you guys for you and your team who
did
that.
Like, turnout was amazing. I kid you not. This is like right after the barbecue Becky thing. And one of the brothers that she ran up on, I actually know him personally.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And so, outside of checking up on him, like, yo, how are you doing emotionally? Because people are going to be trying to get the story, but how are you personally?
Mm-hmm.
And so my partner, Logan, it was really supposed to be like 15 people.
Mm-hmm.
And she sent like a Facebook invite or whatever. So I was like, I'm a graphic designer. Let me make a quick little flyer. And then it started to, like, people started to share. I said, oh, I got to make a real flyer. So I thought it'd be funny to put the barbecue Becky lady on it.
Uh-huh.
And it spread like wildfire.
Yeah,
and
I saw it everywhere.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, okay.
Nationally.
Yeah, like, people who weren't even from Oakland. But I was like, okay, we'll get about 500 people. Almost 3,000 people showed up.
Yeah.
Like,
that's solidarity.
But we were there, and we were looking around like, this happen. Right. Like, yeah. Like the streets were blocked off. Like, yeah. Like the bus drivers was cussing us out. And I was like, look, like, yeah. I know you're trying to do your job, but I mean, we can't help it. Yeah. But the good thing about it is the OPD, they did come step in, and instead of harassing us, they did help with the traffic. So shout out
that's
to them.
That's what they're supposed to do.
Yes, right. That's what we pay our tax dollars for.
Right. Right. Right.
So they did a job that we paid them to do. So that was cool. Right. You know, they weren't out killing black people. So it's all good.
Right.
So growing up, or even more recently, when did you first see the first signs of gentrification? Like, did you see something pop up, or did you see someone that you didn't recognize in your neighborhood? You see, like, some white girl walking her dog, and you're like, hold on, that doesn't look normal.
Yeah, or like, family members getting evicted.
Family members getting evicted.
Oh, my God, yes.
Rent increasing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I moved out of my dad's house when I was 23, and that was that was 2012. And I remember it still being affordable then, but maybe about like 2010 when I tried to like look for studios and stuff, that's when like the pricing started to go up. Mm-hmm. My grandmother lives in East Oakland in the 70s, right next to East Mount Mall. I've never ever seen anybody on her block except for black people and brown people. And when I saw a white girl with dreads walk down her block, literally, never, ever in my whole 29 years of living seen any other person other than black and brown people. And I saw that. I was like, that's it. I was like, I told my brother, I was like, that's gentrification right there. Because nobody's ever been that, like, bold. Not in a sense of bold, but it was just, like, it was our community. It was our, like, space to feel comfortable. So to see that, I was just like, oh my God, shit is real.
It's starting, yeah. It was a hood, you know? That's a hood. Right, and she may have been the first white person to come into the hood and brought her friends.
She did, and she was walking with, like, a brother, you know? Oh. But that could have been, again, that's, like, a part of, like, whenever we get to that, is, like, a part of, like, how are POC people playing a part in, like, gentrification?
First time, like, I seen gentrification, like, a small element of it was when I was driving through Acorn, and I seen this white lady jogging, Acorn, like, at, like, 12 o'clock at night. And I was thinking to myself, she don't know where she at. She robbed and shot. And, like, this is not an area where you can do that. Even if you live there, like, even if you're black, you can't do that.
Right. Acorn on the other side of Mandela.
I was, like, on the market side.
Okay.
And, like, right by the towers. And I'm like, like I say, even if you're black, like, I've been in the towers before and seen things there. And I'm like,
you bold.
You bold. Like, you bold. Like, even as a black man, I'm just like, yeah, good luck with that.
Right. Hope you make it to your destination.
I really hope you make it to your destination. And then just over time, like, it's just, you know, where, I mean, on the block that I grew up, there was always a mix of people. Mm-hmm. But, like, even more recently, like, it's, like, my mom and maybe, like, two or three other houses are, like, are the only black people on the block.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I remember, like, seeing the neighbors that we had across the street from us, they were old, they were elders, they ended up passing away, you know, one at a time, and just, like, the daughter just sold the house out, which is another topic we could talk about later. But like, and then they just moved in, and I mean, they were nice people, but, and I don't think they had any ill intentions, but again, it was just a sign of, like, okay, this neighborhood really is changing. You go two or three blocks down, you're seeing it more and more and more. And but it's just based off of the rent prices. I mean, they know that, you know, somebody who might work downtown at one of these tech companies or whatever tech companies downtown, they can afford it.
Right. Yeah.
Or they work in San Francisco. That's another thing, too. A lot of these people are working in San Francisco, but it's cheaper. To live over here.
Traffic is so ridiculous. And it used to not be.
And
like,
if you live in West Oakland, you can go to West Oakland BART and hop off the BART and go wherever you need
to go.
That's
what I do.
Yeah.
Right. This might be a good time to insert our brother over here, Mr. Seven from Elena Museum.
What's up?
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. So we were talking about what was the first effects of gentrification? What did you see that first propelled you to be like, oh, that's not normal. Something's going on here.
I don't think it's a first step. It really is an energy shift that you see in a town that I notice, you know, and that's something about gentrification. It brings a culture of we're considered the different ones, you know what I'm saying? There's a shift in the kind of vibe of the new people that come, you know, interactions like with Barbecue Becky and so forth, those become more common, and those stares of of disconnect become more apparent, you know?
Yeah.
So it's more of that kind of like shift in the vibes that I notice.
And can you, just because, you know, we all did an intro, do you mind telling our guests like who you are, your mission, and where you're from?
My name is Seven Asfa here, originally from Eritrea, East Africa. Got here when I was a young one, 4, and immersed in Oak Town culture as well as my African roots and cultural connections. So the town has always felt African to me in spirit. So, and in the conscious resistance that you see in the town. So Atlanta Museum is about trying to hold space for the African diaspora and to really maintain a platform where our culture is controlled and owned by us. Mm-hmm. And how can we get past the conversations and get to action, right? So we're about ownership of land and creating spaces for us to create from our cultural identity. So we're right now actively in that process of trying to acquire our first building that we can say we own. Mm-hmm. We've been leasing and are a product of that displacement, right? Now our landlords are trying to evict us and we're fighting that. Mm-hmm. And with the idea of just looking at an exit strategy and telling our story, right? So that's where we're at right now, that nice. Project.
Okay. The property on Magnolia?
Yeah, okay. It's West Oakland, historic West mm-hmm. Oakland, mm-hmm. Black Panther territory, yes. A lot of unionizing, a lot of black ownership that was there before. So West Oakland right now on the back scene. So as a space holder, myself, I've been activating spaces probably for the last 10 years. You get to see who's behind the scenes buying stuff. Oakland is that city and nation right now that's dealing with the quickest turnover and impact on gentrification. So people don't see that from a land acquisition and turnover standpoint, but that's what's happening. And with the eventual landscape looking like San Francisco, where we're just a small minority of, you know, under 5%.
Yeah. Right.
In your guys' opinion, who is driving gentrification?
In Oakland or just in general?
In Oakland.
In Oakland. And then in the general mayor. As well.
Facebook.
Okay.
Facebook. Yes. Okay.
But as far as we're talking from economical standpoint, as the brother was saying about land, like there's been secret meetings where the mayor is trying to sell people on coming here to buy land to build buildings and homes and different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I'm not going to say she's the only one, but she's definitely the main one because she is supposed to be a representative of our city.
Mm. Who's the mayor that was here? The white dude who's now governor?
Jerry Brown.
Jerry Brown. They say he orchestrated a lot of that as far as having back end deals with developers that he signed deals to set the cornerstone for a lot of these, you know, big mega projects that you see. But stepping back from that, I think white supremacy is really fueling gentrification because it's connected to gentrification is the economic wing of basically marginalizing and disempowering, you know, the black community. So it is a product of that. And them taking back these inner cities and having us surrounded around the outskirts where there's less money happening, less cultural connection. So, if I'm going to speak from a foundational level, it's white supremacy.
Right. And we asked earlier, you know, do you guys think gentrification is class-based issue or race-based? What would you...
I'll give you a straight up example. In our case, our landlords are two rich old white people. They bought this building for $140,000 in the late 80s when crack was big in West Oakland, and they bought it for next to nothing because their friend gave them an inside deal that this building was available, right? Mm-hmm. So the connections that white access to money, to networks, allowed them to buy this building. Now this building is now worth $3 million, right?
Whoa.
So were we in the 80s in that period where we can make these kind of investments? No, we were dealing with the height of the crack epidemic.
Right.
So it definitely is to the advantage of white folks that are in a position to buy land on a big level. And this goes as big as Warren Buffett. I remember a conversation I was having with someone when they were saying that, you know, a lot of the money, the investment capital that's pushed is big groups like Warren Buffett's investment groups, right? Mm-hmm. That see cities and say they can put capital and to turn a city that you were once not even wanting, supposed to walk foot on to now, you see them walking like you're observing left and right. It means that there is a big financial push that came in, and that can only be orchestrated, you know, on higher ups.
Yeah, and it's on what he was saying about, like, in the 80s when the building was like 100 and some odd thousand, you know, with that money, even though we were in the thrust of the crack epidemic, if a crack dealer wanted to go buy that building, mm-hmm. he or she could buy that building, but then later it might come out, he was doing it, he bought it with drug money, so now it's a gift and a curse, essentially.
Yeah.
And that was 1980s in Oakland, where our black population was much greater than
exactly. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I don't think we were ever the majority, but that we were like in, I think like 40 yes. something yeah. percentile. Right. Whereas now, I don't even know what. And if trends continue, right. The black population is going to be next to nothing.
Yeah. But that's one of the reasons why, like, with Barbecue While Black, after the first one was so big, like, we realized, like, we have to keep doing this in projects like this, mm-hmm. because there are a lot of people who don't even live, people who moved to L.A. and different places, people who flew in or people who just were displaced locally, and it was like, yo, like, I can't remember the last time I came to Oakland, but I had to come to this just because of the energy that we put out. It's like, yo. Even if we don't live here, we still here. Like, we're still going to occupy space. And, of course, we had people who live across the street, you know, calling the police on us. But we had, we had our, I remember actually at 510 day before we decided to do Barbecue While Black, mm-hmm. we had, like, a sound permit, the whole thing. And, like, some lady was like, oh, they're blasting music. We hadn't even set up the sound yet. And so when the police came, like, I was like, well, we have a permit, so the music is not set up. And he was just like, hey. Look, I understand. And a lot of times these cops, they're frustrated, whether they're black or white or whatever, they're frustrated because it's like, I mean, you're calling us out here for nothing.
Can we talk about, like, the fact that these people are calling the cops and literally wasting taxpayers' money, time on calling cops for, like, these irrelevant reasons?
Even with the Barbecue Becky situation, not to cut you off, with the Barbecue Becky situation, like, I could see, like, when the part where she, like, started crying or whatever, mm-hmm. the cop wanted to laugh. Like,
he was so
like, lady. Yeah.
Like, he wanted, like, even, like, he wanted to laugh, mm-hmm. but obviously he had to do his professional due diligence. Mm-hmm. But he knew it was a bunch of crap.
Let me say this, though, to that of why they feel entitled to call the police on you. For one, you got to understand they don't like you, right?
Right.
You're not a part of this new Oakland. So mm-hmm. when they're paying right across the street from where Barbecue Becky happened, those tenants are now paying upwards of $6,000 a month for rent, and that comes with it for them a certain level of what control, right? Because now we're paying this amount. We're paying taxes in this level, right? So all this is interconnected with this new level of income pressure that is put on the poor and the rich that come with a certain level. Of course, it's class, and it's also low-key racism that they feel entitled when they're paying that kind of bill. Mm-hmm. And if you're putting their foot, hell yeah, if I'm paying $6,000 a month, maybe I feel like I have some control. Right. Now, for us, though, how are we countering the fact that this is our city? This is a city that means a lot, and as far as the bigger culture of black resistance in the country, and how can we stand up to it? So what y'all doing is powerful, and that's what we got to really look
at. Mm-hmm. And I actually had a discussion with my sister, because her grandmother mm-hmm. lives in that area. She doesn't live, like, directly next to the lake. And so she was like, her argument was, well, you know, there are people who work at night and stuff like that. I understand that. Wholeheartedly, I understand, like, if you work all night, you don't want to hear some loud rap music when you get home and you're trying to sleep. But at the same time, the city belongs to us, just like you live here belongs to you as well. And I understand you're spending this money on rent, which is outrageous.
Right.
But I understand to a certain degree, you do want some kind of say-so because you're spending this amount of money, but at the same time, you have to understand, we have to coexist. Mm-hmm. If you're going to live here and we're going to be here, like, we have to find some way to coexist. And he's right. It is, a lot of times, it is just straight blatant racism. The Barbecue Becky thing, well, it wasn't about class. It wasn't about none of that. It was straight racism, period.
Yeah.
So, like I said, for me, I'm all about coexisting. But, you know, the racism, you got to dead it.
Mm-hmm.
Things like the Barbecue Becky thing, like, you got to dead that. Because, you know, just other things that I know about that situation that I don't want to make public, like, it was definitely racism, for sure. Like, she knew exactly what she was doing when she did what she did. So,
yeah. Well, I think it's all of the above. And especially, like, when you talk about historically black neighborhoods and when you talk about places that are considered the hood, like, when you have these new residents coming into the hood and think they're going to change the politics of the hood. Mm-hmm. If we're making noise before you moved in, what makes you think we're not going to make noise?
That's that part. Like, you know exactly. what I'm saying? Don't come in our neighborhood. And change up. Right. You know you didn't feel comfortable. You drove around his neighborhood before you even moved.
Right.
The lake's always been lively.
But the crazy part about it is the day before we did the second barbecue in Wild Black, I drove by the lake and it was like hella white people chilling, listening to music. And
I said to myself, I should go call the police.
Like, just on some like.
That's part of like gentrification. You know, the lake used to be stinky. Mm-hmm. The lake used to have uneven pavements. And that's what I loved about it.
Yeah.
But then, you know, all the beautification happens, which is beautiful and it mm-hmm. should happen so Black people and the people who are from here could have access to that.
Exactly.
But that shit didn't happen until gentrification happened, until the white people came over.
Yeah, a lot of stuff didn't happen until all the white people started moving in.
And that speaks to the economy, right? And, it's not until they come in that the economic infrastructure is in place to then create a whole new look. And through that, our culture is under attack, right? Because they systematically would not police and get rid of the crack situation that you see in the hood. So there was an intentional attempt to keep it depressed. And then when it's green light, and because you got to look at when Oakland became the city to mess with, you know what I mean? There was a period where when Mayor Brown was in place where you started seeing Oakland on Forbes, you know, top five cities to live in. This stuff doesn't happen by accident. So there's an orchestrated platform to really change up and bring investment capital into the city.
Absolutely.
And that doesn't include us being in that picture, right?
Absolutely.
It's suppressing us to the level that we then are just trying to survive in this new economy that we weren't even prepared to live in. $3,000 for one bedroom? What are you talking about? You just dropped Hiroshima on us. You know what I'm saying?
Right. That's a mortgage.
That's right. Serious.
Exactly. And going back,
go ahead.
Going back to what you said, Ave, just it's not necessarily, like, in my opinion, the beautification of like the streets, the neighborhood when white people come in. Like, obviously, like, none of us, you know, want to live in streets that are like potholes everywhere, trash, all of that. But it's the access right now. So like the lake, it's beautiful. Everyone goes to the lake and wants to hang out. But when you go there now, you see it's a certain demographic there. When we want to go hang out, it's like, what are you doing? Why are you here? Are you playing music? Are you, do you have charcoal? Do you like all this stuff?
It's
like,
do you have a permit to be Black at the lake?
It's like, literally, do you have a permit to be Black at the lake? It's like, damn, like, I want to enjoy this too. Like, you guys are Oakland like natives who have been here, who would love to enjoy the lake just like anybody else. Mm-hmm. And it's like, now it's because I'm Black. Okay, well, what are you doing here?
Right.
So it's the access issue.
Yeah,
as
even
well.
Like a couple, 3 years ago, and it wasn't very like highlighted on news, and it was probably before like social media was like really big. There's a drumming circle out here called Boom Shakes.
Are they the ones at the lake all the time?
Yeah, sometimes they are, but this is before, I think, you know, there's like hella white action going on now.
Yeah.
But Boom Shakes used to come and play their drums really close to like the Malanga side. And they got the police called on them for something that they do all the time. And just like, hello, drumming is a part of our like ancestral healing.
Exactly.
So how are you going to just come like disrupt that with like the state and the police?
Because
the
they don't have any culture. I mean, that's just the reality.
Well, their culture is stealing. It's culture.
Exactly.
Right.
Oh, yeah,
stealing land.
They steal our culture.
Exactly.
Like, you know, you have. Right, you have Kim Kardashian wearing braids. I'm like, oh, this is a new thing, Kim Kardashian.
Oh, my God.
And I'm totally not blaming Kim Kardashian.
I am. She put that in her hair, and she said that was okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's an important point about, and that's, and how do we, the culture is under attack in that sense, right? They're taking, gentrification also is an attack on our cultural identity. It's it's them basically coming in and wiping us out or making us workers of this new economy, but yet not the ones controlling and driving our own cultural like platform, which is Oakland. So that's a big part that comes to mind, is how are we controlling what it means to be Black and our new future, our new mindset. So it's important for us to produce content like what y'all are doing here, you know what I'm saying, is produce content and be visible and figure out ways for us to co-work and get past this level of like divisiveness and all the nigga-isms that keep us down, right? Because right now it's happening real quick. It's happening.
We have to.
Yeah.
Gentrification happens quick across the country. When Hurricane Katrina happened, they were quick.
Yeah,
quick. All the nonprofits, all the investment firms, they were quick.
Yeah, because they can get that land for like for low money. And like, I remember watching like a Lil Wayne interview, and he was saying like, the place where I had my birthday party when I was five or certain elements of it. He said, it's gone.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He said, I can't go to these areas and say, oh, I remember when I did this, because it no longer exists. And I remember, I think it was Juvenile, he was on the Breakfast Club, and he was like, man, it's white people living in the Magnolia now.
Mm. Yeah. Magnolia, man. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, like.
Yeah.
Damn. I mean, we talk to our neighbors all the time in the Lower Bottoms, and and I make jokes, and this is going to be a perfect segue, to some of the people that we speak to who've lived there all their lives, who've had generations of families who lived there. And we see some new people coming into the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Mind you, we're new to the neighborhood too. Right? But new people who don't look like us. And I get kind of bent out of shape about it. Mm-hmm. But we're only 2 years into where we live. Like, Nio and I are from San Jose.
Right.
And
that's still a bay.
Right. Because sometimes I got to get a little gully when people are like, well, you're not from up. And it's like, hold on, no. Right. I'm from the Bay,
it's
though.
The Bay. The Bay. Still goes to San Jose. That means
you
the Bay.
Hold on, right. No. We're still.
That's a conversation. We were actually having a conversation today at Elena about that and what it means to be a gentrifier, right? Uh-huh. As a black person, anytime I'm in black space and around black people, that's my community. I belong there. You know what I mean? It's the dynamic of gentrification is crazy. Is there's an element of economic privilege and racism that's brought. So if as a black person, you're not bringing that spirit. So you being there is a part of the solution for black people to hold space, right? As long as you are conscious and not, you know, on some class separatism amongst the black people that are struggling, recover from it. So it's a perspective that you got to look at and say, look, I'm a global black citizen wherever I'm at, and as long as I'm about helping my people and solving this issue, the thing that comes to mind for me with gentrification is there's no, the way they come in is no love in the game, right? And that's why they can do what they do, and it's so hard when you see our people out in the streets now, these same people that's in these tents were people that were actually homeowners at one point, right? As a black person coming into this situation, are you coming with love, which you would of course naturally do as a person of color, and connect, or are you on some privileged, you know, exclusive thing that just is part of that, you know, gentrification wave?
That's what I was saying, that like how POC people can be a part of the problem.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like, are you coming in these spaces? And, like, if you have access to this place, and are you prioritizing people who are from the Bay while you're doing this? Or are you being conscious of how you move in the space as being not from here, you know?
Right.
As a POC person. But I just feel like white people, I feel the ones that I've encountered are not conscious of that. Mm-hmm. So then it's even more triggering.
Absolutely. And, I mean, there are people of color who can be gentrifiers, and like you said, just in the way that they act.
Mm-hmm.
You're black, but if you, I'm not gonna say act white because that's like ignorant. I'm not gonna say it because that's an ignorant statement. But like, if you're doing things that are not benefiting the people, you're just as bad as the people who come and try to change the culture anyway.
Okay,
but I guess that's my question, and the question that we ask Elsa and I all the time, like, let's be real. There are some skin folk that ain't kin folk. So they come into the neighborhood. Some people came. They got their little tech job at Google. Yep. They're about to take the shuttle. And they're just in Oakland because they need to be close to work.
Right.
They're black, but they're not necessarily trying to add or, you know what I'm saying? Right. They're the ones who are, you know, trying to be at the Starbucks, the Whole Foods. They're not really trying to, you know, rap with the people in the neighborhood. They're just trying to get to work. Right. So those people, they're black or people of color. Mm-hmm. Are they gentrifiers?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
If you're not trying to engage with the people, then, I mean, you're just as bad as, like I said, the white folks or the other folks. But we also should talk about how people of color sell off their history. And I say that to say, because it actually happened in my family. My great grandmother passed away 4 years ago, and like literally like the next day, like my great aunt was trying to like get the house sold.
Oh.
And my grandmother's like the oldest, and like after a while, my grandmother was like, you know what? I don't even want to deal with it because me and my mom were like, no, we can do this. Like the people, like the kids at UC Berkeley, because it's like a 10-minute drive from UC Berkeley. We can rent out the rooms, like we can make money. But like my grandmother being, you know, she's an elderly woman. She's just like, yo, like I don't even want to deal with that. Like I just would rather just do away with it. I actually had moved to Georgia for 9 months and it was like the worst 9 months ever. But anyway, I came back and like they had redid the house and it was beautiful. Like. Mm-hmm. And so I asked the guy, he was walking down the street, I said, do you know who lives here? And he was like, oh, I was like, oh, yeah, my great-grandmother used to own the house, or my great-grandparents used to own the house, or whatnot. And he's like, oh, yeah, I know. You know, I knew them for many years. And he was like, yeah, it's like a white and Asian couple. Like who owns that? Which is, I mean, which in the instance is, yeah. In that instance, it isn't their fault. They just bought a piece of property,
right?
Yeah. Well, think my grandmother passed away a year ago too, but it wasn't her will to like sell the house because we got drama in the family. But the cousins were like, well, let's try to like, because it got remodeled, so she's still paying off even though it was paid off before. But it's like, let's try to like come with a way to like purchase it and own it. But even us, like cousins together, can't even afford to like buy this house. And so it's like, man, it can't even like maintain its history. I mean, one, my grandparents wanted us to sell it, but then we just can't even like afford to like buy it out, you know?
But even with that, there are some people in the family, they get greedy. You know, you might have the daughter, the cousin, they're like, man, let's just do away with it and take the money. But then 6 months later, you're broke.
Right.
It's not just a house that you're selling off your history. My great-grandparents lived in a house for like 60 years. Yeah. So you got to imagine how many people, family members, not necessarily grew up in the house living there, but just like who came through that, through that house, and how many of the younger generation, they're not even going to be able to experience that because of greed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But bringing it back to black tech, as you mentioned, that's a key point. Is like black tech is the group of black people that can afford these rents, right? When you look at San Francisco, which is kind of maybe the end reflection of gentrification, where we're very a small minority and we're not in the culture of the vibrance of that city. When black people go there and think that that's the spot, but they don't see their people in large numbers, that even black tech folks are like, yo, damn, where's the culture? Like, I want to come to Oakland. It's on us with platforms like Wokeland and platforms like with whatever we're doing to let people know, like, yo, we have to preserve the culture. And it's important that we divide or break these class warfares that keep us separated and not mixing with one another. Not everyone's in making tech money, right? Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of dope creatives. There are a lot of dope entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And how can we create platforms where all of us mix together and empower one another and try to see with the aspect of what knowledge we have to share with one another and what resources we have to share with one another, that we can kind of continue to empower ourselves and create another narrative of what a city changing could look like, where we are coming. That's why it's important, like you guys coming from wherever you're coming from, to continue to come as black people. And I see that every day, new black faces, and I love it, because and the ones that come to Leonard are like, yo, how can we look at this and do some things that are solution based, right? So
well, I like that perspective, because we have been conflicted about this black gentrification thing, and I'm always like, Anaya, we're gentrifiers, like, stop. She's like, Elsa, no, we're not. And I said, yo, and I was like, do I have the right to be upset when we see all these like hipster white people walking through the neighborhood?
Yes, you do, because it's generational, gender, blood, like, you know, black people have had, this is not enough, it's new in our generation, but it's like we've been fighting for like placement in our home forever. So it's like, it's triggering to see it, whether you're from here or not, you know?
Right.
And that just shows your commitment of how much you like love the city and like how you want to like
you engage with the people, so you know, like I said,
you feel it.
Yeah, like if things like that like irritate you, like, and you engage with the people, you can't possibly be a gentrifier, because a lot of people of color who are gentrifiers, they don't care about that stuff. Like, oh, they're Cindy, you know, whatever. Like, it's no big deal. Like,
But it also is too, because we are in a different tax bracket than, say, the previous tenants of where we live,
right?
True.
Or our neighbors. So it's that kind of dichotomy also, right? Mm-hmm. Where I might want to go shop at the only grocery store in our neighborhood, shout out to Mandela Grocery.
Yay!
But our neighbors may not go there, right? They go to Pack and Save,
right?
And there's no nothing.
But it's okay for that conflict to exist. It's okay. It's okay for you to be making money that you should eat healthy, right?
Yeah.
But how do you try to do things to bring the rest of your community that may not have access to that kind of food up, right? Sure. And what are you doing in work? It's all about just kind of like how we're bringing it full circle and not getting to a level where we have this division that we're better than that person. And I think as a black person who is coming, who's dealing with white supremacy, we all deal with it, whether you're in tech or whether you just, you know, on a corner, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
And my recent experience with some elders that were out in the street, out in a tent area, I saw their tents being destroyed and the cops there to, you know, to basically clean it up. And I just, something told me to come and talk to this elder. And we had this conversation and I recorded it. And it was just so amazing how eloquently he broke everything down of what's going on. And you know, we have a wall or an image in at Atlanta called by it's Amigos mural. And it says, you think I'm dumb,
so dope.
But I see the plot. And we see the plot. You know, whether you're poor or rich, and that's making that connection happen and creating platforms where we can weave in those on the corner and those on tech, that's where it's about. And that's the challenge that we all have in bringing what we're doing in a day-to-day. We may be working a 9-to-5, but what are we doing, like, right now to have these conversations and to make these connections happen? Because there's small minority, the real ones that will you know, not be about this new wave and recognize that, hey, we need to all come together and do some things.
Yeah.
Right.
This is going to be the fight of our lives, guys.
Indeed.
So how do we fight our city council? How do we fight gentrification? You are on the front lines. I mean, everyone is, really. Really. But in the wake of Elena's eviction and in the wake of Permit Patty's, like, it just seems like a very daunting, discouraging colonization reminder, this, like, hey, y'all ain't shit, you can be removed at any time. Out with the old, in with the new. What do we do? I'm sure there's not one thing that we do. I like to go to city council meetings and watch. There are some elders that go to these city council meetings, you guys, and turn up on our officials.
But the sad part about it is a lot of times they act like they're listening, but they don't care. And that's just
they write the laws and they write these policies. And we don't see them, we don't see what they're talking about.
Right.
We don't go to these meetings. We don't know what they're passing.
I agree with you 100%. And I think that we should go to these meetings. But, you know, just like I've seen, like, folks like go like and turn up, like, whether it be about gun laws or like local policies, and they're just sitting there looking like, yeah, okay,
but that's next. The thing we got to continue in, like, I think taking up space is how we do it, just like my warrior say, strength in numbers. That's true. Across the board. And also, that's the problem too, like, I've been going to Warriors games forever and now I can't even afford to go to Warriors game, and they moving to San Francisco.
Which
is also another financial thing.
But yeah, like, you know, There's some groups who, like to take up space on freeways and stuff and highways. And I'm just like, I'm, like, down for taking up space too. But, like, once that and, like, we revolt and we connect, how are we doing, like, community work? Mm-hmm. Like, are we going out to places that are not, like, downtown Oakland?
Right.
Or places that are trendy and hip in Oakland? Are we going to the hood and speaking to the people and, like, listening to what their needs are? Are we creating spaces that, like, are accessible to the hood? Because let's face it, our people still here and we can't get to downtown all the time. We can't get to the BART. So, like, Oakland Second Line, I don't know if you heard of them. They are a bounce band from New Orleans. A lot of them moved here from after Hurricane Katrina. So they have a second line and they go to Aurora Park in the 70s where my mom grew up, by Castlemont High School. And I'm just like, to, like, be in a park where I grew up and my grandmother stays, that, and have an event, you don't, that doesn't happen.
Right.
But the people, like, when we're, like, playing and perform, the people were coming out of their house and walking the line with us. And that's just, like, hella beautiful to me. Like, as an artist, it's important to me that if I'm going to collab in art spaces, like, it's important to me that their priority is Oakland's people and Oakland's artists when it comes to, like, that platform.
Absolutely. Right.
I want to add to that. You guys mentioned the political part. I think there's that conversation to be had, and how we can, in a united body standpoint, say, look, we don't want a little, you know, subsidized rent here.
Right.
We actually want this building. Or, you know, what do you have here that can give us true sustainable presence in downtown? Because, hey, we need to be here on a commerce level, because this is where most of the commerce is happening, right?
Yeah.
So the political part, that's something that, you know, from our standpoint, we experienced that it's just too fragmented as far as how we're coming. You know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil, so to speak. If we're not angrily or in making these demands and out there visibly, this shit is behind the scenes, like I was saying, it's changing so fast. Money's being put, it's nothing personal to them. We're putting up the money. So, you know, we're not, how can you expect them to be concerned about our cultural legacy, right? We have to do that, and we have to understand the urgency in that. Oakland is probably in the middle of this gentrification thing. It ain't over. There's still still black owners. You know what I mean? Yeah. Of how are we talking to these owners and saying, look, how about a black community coming together and saying, look, we'd like to buy this apartment from you so we can all have a way of us having a control level of rent. You know what I mean? So how can we look at what is out there that we can still take advantage of? The battle, you got to make it swaggy. You got to make the struggle swaggy, right? Mm-hmm. This, like you mentioned, this is our new Black Panther struggle, is for us to cultivate and preserve our cultural identity, right? What does it mean to be black moving forward? Yeah. This is it. This is our struggle right now, because that's what gentrification is an attack on. It's cultural genocide, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just spoke to Marvin X today out on the street with my little nephews here. And that's what he was like, yo, you got to make this urgent for people to understand that, look, you could be working your 9-to-5, but you got to, after that, you got to be working on something, you know what I mean, about your people and helping your people. You got to be working on something. If you're not, then you're a part of the problem, because it's happening fast.
Right. So. And like you said earlier, I think what happens in Oakland is going to kind of set the tone for what happens across the country in terms of
absolutely. They're all watching. Because
if this can happen, this is like the blueprint. Like they're like, if we can do this in Oakland,
we can do it anywhere.
Right. But with that being said, y'all, this was like
just great.
Great conversation. That need to happen among black folks, among city council members, people that have access, people that don't. We need to find ways where we can all come together and fight this. Yeah. Figure out ways to,
and also have intelligent conversations, and also for people, I don't want to say who are less intelligent, but for people who may not understand it on a certain
everybody's
level,
everybody's righteous.
Meet them where they are.
Exactly.
You know, a lot of times,
don't speak down to people.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't speak down to people who look just like you, who come from the same areas as you, because you went to college. Like, exactly. So, but that also goes, just because you black don't mean you woke.
Exactly.
But at the same time, but you can go to a person who might not be woke.
Exactly.
Meet them where they are without talking down to them. And like, look, basically, bro, like, if you really want to stay here, because your auntie and your mama, like, this is what we got to do.
Yeah.
Right. So, and there's nothing wrong with meeting people where they are and then raising their level of consciousness. Yeah. But don't, if you come to them like you're talking down, then they're going to close your ears to you.
Yeah, exactly.
We need everybody to prepare for battle.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just a plug for Alena right now. We're in the battle of trying to pay our lawyer fees. If y'all go to the website, alenamuseum.com, PayPal, donate what you can.
Absolutely.
But we are in the middle of that. And I would say, let's make the struggle go viral. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Gentrification is something that is affecting everyone. So let's make it go viral in all the ways that we can. Oakland plays a strong role in the culture of the country as far as resistance goes. So we just want to be true to that legacy and represent, you know, for the ancestors. So let's make it go viral.
Yes.
Right.
Y'all want to shout out your social media?
Where can people
find
you?
Yeah. I'm at Keep a Diasporic, which creatively explores African ancestry through photography.
Yeah.
Gonna be part of Black Women as God coming up. Ooh. Doing the Afrofuturist.
I've been trying I've been trying to find one of them shirts for like 3 years. And
Black Women as God?
Yeah.
Yes. So, my way of the struggle is producing beautiful pictures of Black people across the diaspora to know that we exist. Mm. And actually, we are everywhere.
We are everywhere.
I love that. Find us on Instagram at Real Oakland, TheRealOakland.com. What we do with our shirts now, things that are going on, we're creating messaging through these t-shirts. Mm-hmm. So do support TheRealOakland.com. Barbecuing While Black, BBQN While Black on Instagram. And and the next one is September 23rd, and it's the last one of 2018. So I'm really looking to... Based on the phone call I got, like, they want to, like, charge us these fees based on the first one that we had. So I'm like, so if you're going to do that, I want everybody to come out. And I want us to get our money's worth, not because let's show them that we still have that power. Yeah, so I want everybody to come out. And Barbecuing While Black, for people who might listen to this and think it's just for black people, it's for black folks and our allies. So whether you white, black, Asian, whatever, as long as you down with us on a real level, come through. But if you with the gentrification and all that and, and culture, culture colonization, you can stay in your
$6,000
apartment or $3,000 apartment over in West Oakland.
Right. Yeah.
Which is crazy. That Mr. is ridiculous.
Seven, where can we find you? I know.
At Alena Museum on IG, alenamuseum.com. And my personal IG is at Afro Oakland. And yeah, our platform right now is to look at a solution of us buying our first piece of property here and taking the mission of activating safe spaces for the Black diaspora nationally. Yeah. Yeah. So right now we're building an advisory board of folks, and it's also a volunteer team. So anyone interested in understanding what that would involve and what we have assembled so far as a team, just hit me up on those platforms, 7@AtlantaMuseum.com on the email, and let's build.
Yes, yes, yes. Uh-huh. Let's build indeed.
Absolutely.
So what did you guys think? Let us know your thoughts. Obviously, this is a small, small snippet of the gentrification conversation. Yeah. But we'd love to know what you guys think about what our guests had to say about the topic. And like we said, this is part one of a two-part series on the for our episode. So make sure you tune in next week when we drop the second part.
Part two.
Yes. And with that, stay woke.